Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled in the shape. If only a forging a poet was that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the adult that we are today. So welcome to Double Helix. While we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry we are made of. This is Double Helix with Late Night Poets. I am Aphasiana, and we are in a group called AllPoetry.com. I'm sorry, we're in a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets, and you don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can read along with us and talk to us in the chat. Tonight, I have with me my co-host, Dan Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Phasey. What is happening? It seems like it's been years since we've been co-hosts together.
I know. I've had a strange couple of months off and on. So I'm here. And we also have our friend Pam as well. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Susie. Hi, Dan. Good to hear you
both.
Hey,
Pam.
So tonight was actually inspired by Pam. Pam suggested that I do a contest, and I couldn't say no to this one. It is also near and dear to my heart. Pam, what month is it?
It is Epilepsy Awareness Month.
That is correct, ma'am. I have a form of epilepsy. I wasn't born with it, but I have it as a result of my brain tumor and complications during my brain surgery. And so this is a topic that I connect with quite a bit. I did not know much about it before I had it. And honestly, even now, I was just before the show reading about the different kinds of seizures, trying to decide what mine would be classified as. And the thing is, I've had like all the different kinds. I'm going down the list. Yep. So that's why. So I'm not consistent. I've kind of been around all the different things. I just didn't know what they were called. So everyone has it a little bit differently. There's not one-size-fits-all seizures. I think what a lot of people picture when they think epilepsy is the grand mal seizures, which is not always what it's like.
Exactly. Yep, you can't fit everybody who has epilepsy into a single box. That is for sure.
Your brain is a very strange world. You know,
it is
a electrical fire in there, and you know, can easily misfire.
Mine certainly does.
It's a scary thing. It's a scary thing.
Yeah. I picture, like, because it's all supposed to be wires that are putting things together. You know when you have, like, a messy desk and behind where everything's plugged in, like the TV cord and the Xbox cord and the computer, and
yep.
It's all just, like, tangled up? I think that's me. It's someone put it together. Yep. It's a mess of wires going on.
Yep, I get you. I'm the old fuse box that, running out of fuses. I think that would be me.
Every once in a while, we got to turn you off and on again, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what my wife says. My wife says I have two modes, on and off. And I think that's probably true. But but no, it is. I'm actually a self-proclaimed hypochondriac only because, I don't know, I've just over years just had things. So, I mean, like, I understand stuff, but I can't study medicine. I don't think I ever could, because if I kind of realized how complicated, I'd be worried about every single thing that happened, because, you know, we're very fragile people. You know, there's so much. Human beings are so complex, and the brain is just kind of beyond. I mean, we still don't really understand it, which is amazing that, you know, how little we understand about, how much we understand about the brain, but also how much more we don't. Epilepsy is a bad thing. So sorry, Fazy, that I have to go through that. But I'm very glad, as many, many people in the world, that you survived your operation and you're here. So that's a very positive thing in the world.
Thank you.
And, yeah, so we have some poetry tonight based on the prompt.
We do. Nobody wrote to prompt one, but I'm going to read prompt one anyway, just because I like it. Epilepsy changes people. It sculpts us into someone who understands more deeply, hurts more often, appreciates more quickly, cries more easily, hopes more desperately, loves more openly, and lives more passionately. And that was by supportepilepsyfighters.facebook.me.
That's a great prompt.
Pam picked
it
that
is,
one.
She did. I love that. I wish.
I wish I had written to that one. I didn't realize nobody was going to, but it is. I'm glad you read it, and I'm really glad that, you know, you and Dan are doing this show. It's going to be
Thank
an
you.
Awesome night.
Yeah, I was actually going to. I actually wrote for this tonight. Like, I mean, last night when I was literally lying in bed at 3 a.m. I didn't write it down, unfortunately. I was too lazy. I was just lying in bed, and I wrote a poem, and it's lost in that crazy, you know, electrical brain that we're talking about there. But this is the one I actually wrote about in my head last night, just because the idea of the fact that it really does take sometimes these tragedies or near-death experiences for people to appreciate life, which is too bad. But anyway. We had some people write for prompt 2, looks like.
We did. And prompt two is, I haven't lost my mind. Half of it just wandered off, and the other half went looking for it. And we're going to start that one off by the one from Robbie's Poetry. I see Robbie on the board. Hi, Robbie. And I'm going to get you to read that one, Dan.
Absolutely. this is called Nobody's Home. One moment. While I cough there. All right, so this is called Nobody's Home by Robbie's Poetry. Nobody's home, that's how it feels. When my wander's off its own accord, often unbidden, thoughts scattered, often with the harshness of bright light. I cannot say always with certainty what causes it, as my mind meanders during conversation, as it refuses to remain stationary in its thoughts, my eyes staring off into space, knowing just after these moments will not be retained in my recollection. It's a hurtful and embarrassing thing in the end. Sometimes I wander aimlessly, go on autopilot for a while, and when I come out of it, I feel somewhat embarrassed, wondering what I look like to others as they see me wander and yammer on. I retained a greater degree of control over it late, but there's always a dread of over certain things. The sickly blue lights on the bus, the harsh white fluorescence that still remain some places, or the potential impact of a very stressful day. There's always that itch of worry in my mind when things get stressful. What part of my mind will simply say, I want a vacation, and I will have to say no, and I'll have to and I'll have no say in the matter. Excuse me, end poetry. And Robbie wrote, written in the second picture of the Episodic Month Poetry Contest, inspired by my personal experiences with dissociation, a secondary effect of my epilepsy.
Well, this is great, Robbie. Yes, that disassociation feeling, the kind of absence, seizure moments. I feel this. I like that you point out that sometimes there are triggers and sometimes you're not even sure what did trigger it. Sometimes it seems to come out of nowhere, but there are those things. The blue lights on the bus, absolutely. I've been taking taxis because I can't handle the bus. The fluorescent lights in some places. And stress, how stress affects it. You know, if you have a stressful day, if you don't eat at exactly the right times, if you don't sleep the proper amount, which I never do, there are so many different factors. So you do have some degree of control if you can avoid all of these things, but it's a minefield trying to avoid it all. So I like that you put that in there, that, you know, there's a little bit that you can do to be in control, but that there are factors and that sometimes you don't even know what set it off. And I like that it says that it's hurtful and embarrassing, because it can be something that you're kind of shy about, and like, you shouldn't have to be. You're sick. That's not something to be ashamed of, but it can, you know, come across in ways that people don't understand. Mentioning that you're not sure how it looks to others, I do think that's an important thing to point out, because often people are mistaken as being drunk or high. I actually got kicked off the bus because they thought I was drunk. I couldn't stand up when we were moving, so I sat down in a place that was marked just as handicapped, and I don't look as handicapped as I am, so some person was yelling at me for being in that seat, and then I tried to tell them that I needed it, but I was having a moment where I was kind of slurry, and I was not quite there mentally, because I was struggling with this, and they thought I was high, and they kicked me off. So it happens where it can be really embarrassing, because you're kind of not moving the way people expect, or maybe not talking in a sensible way, and it is frightening I like that it says, you know, there's that the worry that that you might have your mind go somewhere else. You know, it limits you. It makes me think about how, like, I really like to hike, but I get nervous when I'm near, like, cliff edges because, you know, if I'm fine, then I'm fine there. But what if I had a seizure and I fell down? So then I start panicking about that. But you have to consider it in so many different situations. It's like, I could do this, but what if that happens? What if your mind goes away for a little bit? You know, even if you're not going to have the convulsions, just being absent for a couple seconds can be dangerous. So thank you. You made so many important points in this, and you said it in a beautiful way. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I have to agree. I really like how Robbie wrote about his disassociation, as he said, which is a secondary effect of epilepsy, because people oftentimes don't think about the fact that there are secondary effects and different forms of epilepsy. And, you know, I do like where he says, it's a hurtful and embarrassing thing in the end. Sometimes I wander aimlessly, go on autopilot for a while, and when I come out of it, I feel somewhat embarrassed, wondering what I looked like to others as they see me wandering and yammer on. And, you know, I just got to say, because my sister has similar seizures where she's still awake, but, you know, she'll start, like, an example with my sister, one thing that she would do is, like, she would just have, like, a partial seizure where, like, one arm shaking, or she would just, if she was reading a magazine, she'd keep turning the pages. She also is one who was triggered by, like, she had to learn not to lose her temper, because it used to be if she lost her temper, a seizure would follow. Now, me, mine, as I said before, are controlled with medication, but when I used to have them, I'd have the grand mal, which is horrible for, you know, the fact that you could easily fall and, you know, be confused afterwards, but people do tend to be a bit more understanding. You know, it's horrible to say, but oftentimes there is that stigma that if people can't really see your disability, they tend to misjudge it. And so I can imagine walking around in this fugue state, you know, this disassociation state, or being just awake enough for people to, you know, feel like you're, or think you're drunk, or think something else is wrong with you. People are just, you know, yeah, I mean, well, and like you said earlier, Faisy, I mean, even those of us with epilepsy still have so much that we need to learn from each other and through research. But I think I'm really glad that Robbie was inspired, because this is a raw, emotive, you know, take on the prompt. And there's such a beautiful honesty to this, in speaking about the losing time and himself, and the whole thought of lack of control. And I have to agree, when it comes to having any form of a seizure or secondary effects of a seizure, a lot of it is that emotional stress of just feeling like you have little to no control over your life. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Dan, you read it for us. Would you also like to comment?
I absolutely would, and I'll start off the whole show by saying that, you know, I don't have epilepsy. I don't actually know anybody that has it, so this is going to be both a learning experience for me, but also hopefully I can have some insight into my, you know, kind of my takes on this. I think it might hopefully be interesting. And I thought this was just really beautiful, and like Pam said, very, very personal. I could feel this and a lot of things with it. So the third line where it says, when my wanders off of its own accord. I'm assuming it's supposed to be when my mind wanders off, but I'm taking it as complete genius because I actually think it's like an amazing line, not having the word mind in there, because the mind has now wandered off. It's gone. Right? So the word mind is not in there. So what, Robbie, if you did that on purpose, I know you did. Even if you didn't do it on purpose, your mind did it on purpose. So I think that's actually genius of taking that word out of there. That's actually extremely inspiring to me. I'm gonna have to work on a poem that does things like that. I did like, as you guys both said, the hurtful and embarrassing thing, and I kind of never understood it, and I even don't understand it when I do it. You know, people do get embarrassed for their illnesses, and it, to me that doesn't, you know, I don't really get that because it's not like your fault. You know, and it always, that type of a thing always, like I said, I understand that. I understand how it is in society, but it shouldn't be like that, I guess, is the way I understand it. Like, why, you know, people would think less of you or why you're embarrassed, but people do that. And I've had illnesses, I've been sick, whatever, and it's just, it's not something you want to do. Everybody wants to take care of themselves and wants to be strong. And, you know, like, it gets embarrassing when you're not like that, when you can't act yourself. The thing I got about this, the whole poem was being away from home. You know, a lot of the things that Robbie's talking about here is being away. So he's talking about his coworkers, you know, hurtful, embarrassing things. Sometimes I wander off aimlessly, go all apart. I feel embarrassed, wonder what others look like to me. But then the lights that can do it. And I've had mental illness before where I'm extremely anxious or scared or depressed or whatever it is and got nervous before about being away. Like, well, what if something happens when I'm away, you know, and I'm not in the safety of the house? That always gets me, and that got me with this too, and that must be one of the scary things. Either you know, a nervous thing can be if you're completely by yourself, right? So you're in your home completely by yourself, and what if something happens and there's nobody here to help me, right? So you are alone. Or if you are away from home with a bunch of strangers, you know, just in a weird place that, you know, what do you do? How do you get help, you know, away from the safety? And that's some of the things that related to me on this as well, too. But I also like the kind of metaphor, personification of the mind, because that's a weird, you know, I just inspired myself with that one. That's actually personification of the mind. But I want a vacation, and I'll have no say in the matter. and that has to be very, very frightening because, you know, no matter what physical things ailments by people have, they hopefully always have their thoughts, right? Because that's what you can at least think, and what can I do? How can I get myself out of this? But if your mind isn't working straight, you know, how scary is that? Because you can't get it out of there. Your mind's not working. You know, like Robbie's disassociation. He's off in the, you know, what if it happens when he's driving? What if it happens if somebody's, you know, he's going to get attacked and now he can't, you know, control himself? I would hate to just not be, you know, it's one thing I've always had, knock on wood, is control. You know, I could think my way out of things. And if you're, you know, if your mind kind of goes away for a while, like you said, on vacation, you just disappear. You come back and say, what just happened? You know, what did my own mind put myself into? So yeah, that was you know, really great and personal. And Robbie, I could feel, you know, I could feel like I was in your shoes when you, or like I was you when I was reading this, which is definitely a sign of a great poem. So excellent job. Great way to start out. Thanks, Robbie. And now what do you want to do?
Now I would like Pam to read the one by Time Teller.
All right. Hard Drive Wipe by Time Teller. Data frazzled, lightning static corrupts synapses, binary code becomes capricious. Splits in half is lost as alternating currents fry bridges, boiling cytoplasm. smart sockets fill with anxiety, infecting the branches and trees of dendrites. A mine's forest burns, embers flickering everywhere, wildlife sprinting in all directions, acetylcholine charged with convulsing electrons, thrash in a race to nowhere, unaware of dream, coffee spilt over keyboard, flickering screen reveals cascading failure as machine code becomes rubble. Visual sea twists strobes into chains of basic chaos as a crowd crushes to exist the nightclub, too many tube train screens into stations, sparking confusion, briefly illuminating graffiti that shouts across synaptic gaps. Paint stripper removes mitochondria, laying waste to a landscape, charcoal and embers whispering smoke, snicker in the recess of a once cerebral, gray, feral, fertile grassland, now laid naked to strangers, blushing with consciousness, and slowly a whirlwind tornado returns what it took, and a schismatic storm gives way to one cold again. End poem.
Fabulous read, Pam. And I really enjoyed this. I felt like it had some really great metaphors here. You know, the binary code being mixed up, the trains I really liked as they're all going into the station and going crossing the tracks and going in the wrong way and illuminating the graffiti mess. I have this one part of my head where I know now there was a tumor where my thoughts get stuck there and I can actually like physically feel it's like a little train crash happens and I'm like the path is blocked, their thoughts not going, and then I realize I'm like, oh yeah, it's right there, okay. it's in that spot, and then you just know that's going to be like mini seizure and it'll pass, but the train thing really resonates with me. And the way that it described, like, if you spill coffee on a keyboard and it's like that flickering screen and the little like blue shocks of stuff that's mixed up, that's totally the frazzled brain. I thought this had some really good ways of describing it. Dan, what was your response?
Yeah, the same thing. It was an interesting journey. The hard drive wipe is a great line for describing epilepsy. A great line for this. But this whole metaphoric journey that you're kind of taking, it just seems like what I got out of it was chaos, right? It just seems like everything is just kind of chaotic. But in the end, it gives way, you know, at the end it returns back, gives way to code once again. So things are actually working the way they're supposed to work. But I like the chaos as a crowd rushes to exit the nightclub. I've been in a ton of crowds. There was this one time, so I live in Boston, right? So it was New Year's Eve with my wife and I, and we were in Boston, we watched the fires, and it was one of those nights. It was freezing, freezing cold. Now, I understand I'm talking to two Canadians here, so I can't complain about the cold, but it was very, very cold that night. It was like negative 10 degrees or something, and we were out on the ocean, so there was an ocean breeze, and everybody was just freezing. But after the fireworks, everyone's rushing for the subway, and it's the only time in my life that I'm a big guy, I'm like 6'4", and I was basically moved like I was in a crowd and I was moving, like I was trying to stay still, and I almost lost my wife in the crowd because I'm holding her hand and the crowd was moving moving like this entity of its own, and I was literally moving, like I was standing still and the crowd was literally carrying me along, and like I said, my wife was like, I almost lost her before she was going a different direction. It was a scary, scary thing. That's kind of what it reminded me of, and I could see that of the crowd kind of, you know, like controlling you, and you have no control over it. What else was the other one there? infecting the branches and trees of dendrites, which is the mine forest burns. That's great, great imagery right there, where it's, you can just picture kind of it, you know, the electrical impulses and those dendrites kind of moving off. I'll also say the acetylcholine. I just want to just call that out. So acetylcholine charged with convulsing electrons. Acetylcholine is an important neurotransmitter that plays the role in brain functions such as memory and so forth. So using that chemical I thought was really neat as well too. But yeah, this is to me like a journey into chaos, and then luckily there's a bit of a happy ending at the very end. So it was great. Pam, you got to read it and did an awesome job. What did you think?
Oh, this was definitely a pleasure to read. There was some tongue-twisting words for sure, but it was a really intelligent write. And I have to say that not only Time Teller, but pretty much all the writes in the contest impressed me, because not everybody, like Roald said, you know, in their AM, you know, I have epilepsy, or the person I know has epilepsy. And yet everybody seemed to get it, which means to me either they know somebody or they have it themselves, or they did their research. And either, no matter what, I mean, and that's how I feel about Time Teller's right. I feel like whether he knows somebody or, you know, he has seizures himself, but or you know, he just did his research, he's done an amazing job of it, because he does bring in a lot of the triggers, the visual triggers, like the flashing lights at the nightclubs, even, you know, the paint stripper, the certain smells trigger. And I, too, like Faisy, liked the part about too many tube trains scream into station, sparking confusion. That not only gives the idea of what it's like for all those mixed up messages that cause the seizure, but even, you know, that becoming obsessed with something, you know, like me, myself, I have this thing where occasionally I'll get stuck on a sentence, whether I'm reading a book or writing a poem, there'll be one phrase or sentence I'll get stuck on, and I'll find myself saying it over and over again, to the point where I'm even annoying myself. Because, well, actually, I'm the only person saying it. I'm saying it, too, because I'm speaking to myself. But, you know. Yeah, I thought this was an extremely intelligent write, strong imagery and metaphors. And I like how at the end he speaks on coming back to your normal code, but how you have to go through so much before that happens. And then, you know, where he says, gray fertile grassland now laid naked to strangers, blushing within consciousness. Yeah, I thought that's a really great way to say what it feels like to have to be so vulnerable in front of strangers who don't necessarily understand. And so this is an amazing write. I have to say kudos to Time Teller, and very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. Robbie has joined us. Hi, Robbie.
Hello, folks.
Hey, Robbie.
Sorry I couldn't call in on my on the first poem there on my own. There, I was still helping my brother with something and setting up a couple of things, but. I'm all settled in now, so I was able to call in.
Well, I'm glad you did. I should have waited. If I realized you were going to call, I would have waited for you to get your own.
Well, I wasn't too sure about whether I was going to call or not. Today's been just one of those days where I've just been just bouncing all over the place like a pinball with appointments and everything, and I wasn't too sure how I was going to feel at night for anything like a. So, yeah, there was one thing I skipped with my brother in the evening. But, yeah, I'm here now, so.
Welcome. Do you want to comment on the poem by Time Teller?
Yes, just as you had, you folks had mentioned, like, right away I got the whole thing of a hard drive wipe. Like, I like that idea of comparing it to technology, and because it is like, you know, it does feel in that sense like a wipe sort of, or a temporary wipe, you know, or the blue screen. Hey, yeah, like a blue screen. Oh, I got the blue screen to death. I got to reboot now. That sort of a thing. And in this, after a while, the organic part came in. So I like that they went from technological to organic. As you know, it talks about a hard drive and binary code and everything. But then it talks about branches and trees of dendrites and everything. And it kind of reminds me of the brain's funny that way, because it's like you could say it's a computer, but it's an organic computer. So it has some of those elements of a computer, but at the same time, it's got elements that are much, much different because it's a because it's an organic thing, right? And then at the end, it says, "And slowly a whirlwind tornado returns what it took, and a schismatic storm gives way to one code again." So it's kind of moment you have where you're like starting to finally come back, and you're like, oh gosh, I was in a different place, wasn't I? Or like if you're in the case of if you've dissociated. But of course, if you have a seizure, it's the because I've woken up from seizures and you're stiff as a board, right? You just look, because your whole body has tensed into just one giant spasm. The schismatic storm is to me is kind of is either like the mind storm that you come out of when you dissociate, or when your mind and body come out of when you have a grand mal. So that's what the last part of that reminds me of.
Those are great observations. Now I'm going to do one of mine. I have a few on the board tonight. We may skip some of mine because I'm dominating, but I think we have time tonight. There was not a huge amount of rights that I'm just going to keep throwing mine in there for now.
Sure.
They're short. This is called Another Brain Blip. Trails forged by electrical currents are misaligned in my brain. Thought patterns scattered, ideas swirling down the drain. There's a brick wall in my mind where concepts get smashed. Just when I think my CPU is up to speed, I realize it's crashed. I can hear my pulse pounding fast, feel my face tighten in spasm. Future as murky as the past, lost in my temporal lobe's chasm. The highways in my mind are washed out, mudslides. Impulse skid out of control without lane lines to guide. There's a swelling above my eye that I suspect is the cause. I just don't have the time to put my life on pause. End poem.
Excellent read. Another brain blip, and I always like those as well too. It's just the title to me on that is acceptance. You know, it's. I mean, seizures are serious things, right? I mean, they can, you know, I don't know. You guys can tell me, because I'm certainly not an expert at it, if they can kill or they can cause, you know, the possibility of causing serious damage. But it's not a serious thing. And, you know, I think to me, and you can tell me, Fazy, is causing it a brain blip is kind of that acceptance of, oh, it's just this thing I had, you know. It's no big deal. I just kind of, you know, kind of brush it off, because you have to be strong so you can take it and kind of move on with life. So the title, I think, was really good. I thought the rhyming was good as well too, and it was interesting. You know, the way you designed the whole poem was great as well. Trails formed by electrical currents, thought patterns scattered. There's a brick wall in my mind where concepts get smashed. So I think if CPU is up speed, I think it really crashed. And I like the brick wall in your mind. That's interesting to me, because kind of it can be, from what I understand, kind of like things bottle up. You talked about that, Fazy, where, you know, it's different for everybody, right? And you have that section where it almost feels like the memory's there. Okay, this thing is stuck there, you know. Yeah, and that can be kind of interesting as well too. If the electrical, you know, impulses of the problem is in one section there and it's kind of stuck there, it's this kind of brick wall that, you know, things won't go by, and you have to break down the wall, right, for things to go forward. It was a great read and very well written. Nice job. Let's go to Pam. Pam, what do you think?
Oh, this is great. I thought it was a wonderful raw and emotive look at, you know, the personal look at the effects that a seizure has on you, Fazy. Great rhyme and flow, amazing imagery and metaphors. I really like, I can hear my pulse pounding fast, feel my face tighten in spasm. Future is murky as the past, lost in my temporal lobes, chasm. And then the line after that, which says, the highways in my mind are a washed out mudslide. I thought the visual of a washed out mudslide is really a great way to describe, you know, where the after effects of how you feel like after a seizure and, you know, even days after. Definitely an amazing write and a good, honest look at those effects. So great and right and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Robbie, your thoughts on this?
Well, there's two things that caught me right away. It's at the end, I just don't have the time to put my life on pause. And it's just that feeling of like, when you feel something happening, and it's like when I dissociate at work one time, and that was the first time that it happened, and I thought to myself, it was that same sentiment, like, oh my God, I don't have the time for this. I don't have time for this crap, you know? And that's the thing is like, I found that if I resist too much, it adds too much energy to it. And it's like a confrontational thing and it'll happen. But if I'm just go with the flow too much, then my mind just lets go and I have the dissociative episode. Like if I find that sweet spot, then I can maybe avoid it. But yeah, I relate to that feeling totally of I don't have the time to put my life on pause. Like you're trying to trudge through it, right? Because you can't just stop right in the middle and be like, okay, I'm just going to give myself this time to chill out or whatever, you know, when you're in the middle of something. and this especially too, like, feel my face tighten in spasm, future as murky as the past, lost my temporal lobes chasm, and talking about when you're wondering, okay, well, I think this spasm is indicating, you know, this on my face or, you know, in my muscles or whatever. Oh, okay. Something's happening or something has happened. Before I took my magnesium D3, I would have like lucid, vivid nightmares. And someone else had described it as your mind moving through glass. Like, it's really that bad. And you can tell it's like a small seizure, it feels like, because like when I would wake up, part of my face would feel like really tight. Right. And it's just like, oh, it happened last night. And I had to deal with that so much before the magnesium and D3 tamed that. And just in general, you know, you have those tells in that, and that's the stress in itself, because you're thinking, oh, boy, it's happened. I can feel the tightness in my neck or the twitch in my face or whatever. And it brings anxiety. Like hear my pulse pounding fast. And yeah, that happens because you have an anxiety towards realizing, oh, you know, this and that has happened, because I can feel the tightness in, you know, whatever part of my body.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent insight and comments, Robbie. Thank you. And I too like that, the very last line. I can, you know, again, I don't have experience, you know, with epilepsy, but anytime I'm sick or anything that, or if I'm injured, it's mostly like annoyance now, because I don't have time for either. Like, I can't be sick. I have stuff I have to do. You know, when I, it's, that grass is always greener syndrome, right? Where, you know, when I'm, you know, when I'm working, I work all the time. I do stuff all the time, and all I want to do is relax. And then when I'm sick, I'm like, I can't lie down. Like, I just want to get better so I can just do stuff again. But yeah, that's, I feel like that a lot when I'm, there's something physically wrong with me. If I can't do something, it's just, it's annoyance of, I just let me get better so I can just get on with life, you know? Yeah, great comment. Fizzy, anything to, I know you have multiple, you know, poems tonight, but anything on this specific one you wanted to say?
No, I think you all got it. So thank you so much for your wonderful comments.
Cool.
Miss Pam, I have put your poem up.
All right. Lost in dark tides. Once there was floating auras, that feeling that something was wrong, a brief warning before the brain's electrical system became the smeared ink of mixed messages. There was barely time to sit before the fall, not of civilization, but of self. Darkness took over as I became lost beneath obsidian waves. I emerged in several states of confusion, unable to say where I am or who, waiting for the precious minutes that were needed, putting the puzzle pieces back together with clumsy hands and sharp bolts of pain digging into my brain. My entire body would react, nausea and exhaustion, a frustrating sense of helplessness. Nothing mattered but the laying still as I hoped for the healing that came with sleep, the healing that never felt complete. My soul weighed heavy with hellish inner voices nagging, this will happen again, and you never know when, where, or when. The ghosts of these rabbit holes, whole journeys still haunt me, as that I still at times feel lost in tides of dark waters in my waking life. End poem.
That was so good, Pam. I this is true on so many levels. It's like it feels so real, and I know it is real. So, but I mean, even if I didn't know you and know your situation, this just rings real. I like that you describe the electrical system as becoming smeared ink. That's an interesting way to put it. And then I thought you were clever the way you said, before the fall, not of civilization, but of self. And that fall of self works on multiple levels because, you know, you're falling away from yourself in a metaphorical sense, but you're also often falling, physically falling. So there's the falling, there's the falling in an emotional way, there's the falling in a, like, you're kind of mentally falling away from yourself, and there's the falling as in you're kind of straying from the path that you wanted for your life, maybe. There's so many different ways that fall can be taken, and I like when words can go in a layered way. Where is it now? Describing it as like the puzzle pieces getting put back together with clumsy hands, just when you feel all like broken apart into pieces, especially your mind, and like just waiting for that all to come into place and lock together and feel whole again and to make sense. And for me, after my seizure, I can still feel that things don't line up properly. Like, I picture it, like, in, there's this game where you have to line up the pipes and the green ooze comes by, and, like, if you don't have the pipes lined up just right, it messes up. I feel like my brain is that. The pieces aren't quite lined up right. It's, like, very close, but it's just a little bit off. And that starts to happen right before, and it's terrible afterwards. So something about that puzzle piece line hit me. And then the bolts of pain, which not everyone kind of understands that seizures are painful. And they are, and during, but also as the muscle problems afterwards. And that exhaustion part, I'm so glad you put that in, because that tired feeling after a seizure, like there is, it's so hard to explain how tired that is. That's not like a normal tired. It's like an inhuman kind of tired. There's no word for that kind of tired. Exhaustion is like an understatement. I'm so glad that you put that in, because that is a big part of it. And then that, not just that, you know, physically you're exhausted, but also your soul weighed heavy, because you have that nagging feeling of it could happen again anytime, anywhere, that fear. And I think that's a reoccurring theme throughout the poems tonight, is it's that thing lurking literally in the back of your mind, that could get you whenever. So you have to be aware of it all the time, and that's emotionally exhausting. I think you covered it all in this one poem. Well done, Pam.
Thank you.
Robbie, would you like to comment?
Oh, yeah, this one was especially visceral, and it kind of made me think of where, of the idea, the feeling of you don't know, especially what the trigger might be, or what might be like a new trigger. Like I remember when they had those evil, just there is no, sometimes you find something in epilepsy that you feel like a genuine sense of anger. And for me, it's those evil blue fluorescent lights on the buses. They're just the devil. And there's one time where I just, all of a sudden I felt nauseous. And I dissociated so heavily, I almost walked into my old apartment. And I just, I was halfway there, and I'm like, oh crap, this is my dad's apartment. This isn't mine. And I walked to my apartment. And it's just that this poem catches that feeling of the frustration of of the triggers, and also of the frustration that it might happen again. And this one, like I said in the beginning, especially has the very visceral feeling. This one, of all the poems thus far, gives me the heaviest sense of the internal feelings you have when it happens, of the frustration over it, and you know, wondering when it might happen again, and what the triggers will be.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you.
Excellent points. I really like the frustrating sense of helplessness, and that can, you know, because it is something that's completely out of your control, right? And that can, again, go with any kind of injury or illnesses, but epilepsy especially, it's just, like you said, Robbie, you never know when it's going to happen or what's going to happen, and there's really, like, not much you can do about it. You're kind of stuck there waiting for it to end. So that helplessness is brutal for anybody that is kind of stuck in a physical situation that they can't help. What was the other part there I had? Oh, the ghosts of these rabbit hole journeys still haunt me. So I like the idea of rabbit hole journeys, because you're kind of going down this path, and right, you don't know what your mind's going to happen. So you're down the rabbit hole of it. But the ghosts of them do still haunt you. And, you know, I can relate for being, like I said, an anxious and nervous person, and you know, having gone through severe hypochondria before, where you just, it does still haunt you. Just you remember them. It's almost like a drug addict, because it's something that you can't get away from. So what happened to you before, you know, you can have these panic attacks or have these thoughts of, is it going to happen to me right now? You know, if I'm driving or I'm on a plane somewhere or I'm somewhere that I can't get help or that's dangerous for me not to be in control, right? It's always in your head. And you always remember what happened. It's not a pleasant situation, right? It's very scary. So, it just sticks in your mind. Faziana, you have a I just wrote today for another one of your contests for Sinner and Saint about the memories that kind of haunt you. And, you know, these are memories, right? That you remember this stuff happening to you, and it is going to haunt you that it can happen again, or that it's something that's part of you, you know, that you can't shake it. I mean, the longer you're away from it, maybe, you know, you can start forgetting things, but it's always there. Is it going to happen, like you said, Robbie? So.
And then Maggie asked one thing I wanted to mention before the show ended, and this applies to all of us epileptics, and that with the COVID and the quarantine, it made me think of the psychological effect of people with epilepsy, because we were forced, just like everybody else, to be in our own space, and then not just physically, but in our own head space, our own mental space. And I just think that my personal opinion is that for anybody with epilepsy, to be like forced to be in your own headspace all the time, that much, it's not a good thing. Like you want to, because your brain naturally goes to such an electrical storm, you know, you want to externalize, you want to be external in the world and that, and, you know, like, to constantly be in your own thoughts and all that. Like I felt that it didn't do me any favors. I think it like lowered my seizure threshold personally, especially with dissociation. And I could feel that once or twice during when we had really strict rules in the store and all that. So that's the thing I just wanted to mention as a general observation before the show ended.
Well, Robbie, can I ask a question on that? Do you mind? So that is very interesting. Like, you are kind of stuck, you know, you're in your own headspace because you're kind of stuck at home. But there's also those dangers that you worry about going out, right? You could be out somewhere and all of a sudden you get this trigger you didn't expect to come by that's out of your control. So is there a balance, or just this kind of, you know, stuck in the middle type of thing? You don't want to be alone and stuck where you're just thinking, but also being out in the world can be a little scary too.
I think it's a different balance for everybody. I think everybody's case is unique, so that the balance for everybody is different in terms of how confident they are in going out versus how confident they are in being alone, and the benefits for each person of like how much they are alone versus being out.
Interesting. Okay. Sorry, just diverging. Yeah. I was curious about that, so thank you.
I was kind of on the other side of that because I was already unwell to a degree where I had trouble going out. So when everyone else was locked in, I'm like, now they know how I feel. this is how I was. This is not a change for me. not that I wish that on everyone, but it was just sort of like, I had less seizures because I was not around stuff that was triggering. Our next poem. Before I say the next poem, I was supposed to say that starting with Pam's, it was a new prompt. And I was supposed to say that before Pam, so I'm sorry, Pam. She did prompt 3, which is seizures suck. They are exhausting and scary. They make you feel angry, foggy, tired, sad, confused, testy, sick, humiliated, and they are physically, emotionally, and mentally draining. Please be understanding if I'm not in a good mood after having one. I could really use your support these days. And that was by @social_epilepsy. So that was the prompt that Pam wrote to, and that this next poem is to. Robbie, would you like to read the poem?
Okay. This is the granddaddy of them all. This is the grand mal. get ready, folks. The grand mal. In the whisper of a moment when my breath is always clutched, a familiar shriek jolts me into reaction. I slide into home base to cradle you in my wings as you roll in turbulent sea. All I can do is hold your head from crashing against the rocks. Please don't drown. The roar of unending waves simmering in my ears goes silent. I dare not breathe until you do, spinning down a vertigo vortex where time suspends me in a noose. All that matters is to see you again. Please don't drown. Please don't drown. Come on. Come up for air. Don't drown. I'm waiting, waiting. How long has it been waiting? It's too long. It's too long. Then, slowly, you come back into your glassy eyes. Talk to me. Answer questions. But I know you won't. You won't remember this nor that, which has left its scar on a mother's wounded heart. End poem.
Thank you, Robbie. This is a really powerful poem from the perspective of the mother in this situation. She's not the one having the seizure, but she has that anxiety of having her child go through that. And as awful as it is to experience the seizure, I know that seeing your child or your loved one go through something awful can also be horrible, that fear for them. And there's nothing you can do. There's a helplessness of, because, like, there's not really much you can do for seizure first aid. You know, everyone at work always asks me, because I've had a lot of seizures at work, they're like, hey, so what do I do? And I'm like, make sure there's nothing I'm going to hit my head on. Like, that's pretty much it. you can't do too much. So that helpless feeling is awful as a mother. Hold your head from crashing against the rocks. And that begging, don't drown. I like that that's repeated. Please don't drown. Please don't drown. The repetition throughout this, because it becomes like a mantra within your own mind, trying to stop the danger and the pain for the child, and that emphasis on the waiting, waiting for someone to breathe, for someone to look responsive again, and not being able to breathe as you watch it. I like when she talks about holding her breath, because that's something you naturally do when you're seeing someone go down like that, and wondering how long it's been, because it's your time perception when you're in a moment of crisis changes. Things can seem so long when it's someone's not breathing or responding, then a moment can feel like forever. And you do have to monitor the time. If it's been a certain amount of time, then you need extra medical attention. Not knowing how long it's been because you've been, you know, panicking yourself. I like that when it repeats, it's too long, it's all caps, and it has exclamation marks, because there's that panic there. You can feel her panic in the way that it's written and the way that Robbie said it. It goes to the wakefulness, but the glassy eyes, there's still that haziness that she's recognizing. And she knows that this is a time that will be forgotten, but she will never forget it. She will remember that fear, and it will live on in her, fear of another one. I thought she did a marvelous job of showing how terrifying it is to be on the sidelines of that. Dan, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a great perspective. You know, everything we've done has been from people having epilepsy. This is somebody watching that, and you know, if you're watching somebody that you love, especially a kid who's sick, it's the most horrible thing when you feel helpless. You know, I have a kid. He's older now. He's in college, but you know, I remember him being being ill, and that was like the worst thing is what do we, you know, making that decision, like, what do we do? Is he sick enough? Should we be calling the hospital? Or do we just kind of, you know, I don't know if anybody here has ever been a new parent before, but when you first came home, there's no like direction books, right? It's not like you can look up a manual and see what's going on. It's the same thing with you know, if your kid has epilepsy, I mean, you can learn as much as you can and people can tell you things, but you're still helpless, right? You're staring at this person that you love and they're going through this and what do I do? I get, cause it can be a, you know, like you said, Afaziana, there's a time when, okay, you know what, I got to call an ambulance. I got to get something over here for this. And so you having to make these decisions is just the most scary and horrible thing. You know, and that felt a scar on the mother's wounded heart. You know, what it's not even yourself of being helpless and what can you do, but what you don't want to watch, especially a child, go through something like that. You just feel so bad. You can feel like it's your fault because you're the parent for whatever reason, even though it's not. So it can be a heart-wrenching thing, and just that sense of helplessness is really portrayed here great. So I thought it was very, very impressive. Awesome. Pam, can we go to you?
Yeah, I really like that this one was written from the perspective of a mother watching her child have a seizure and the concern, the fear, the sense of helplessness that comes with that, but also speaks on the mother's love for their child. And, the part where she says, it's too long, you know, that was great because it's supposed to be that if a seizure lasts more than 5 minutes, but honest to goodness, when you're watching your child have a seizure, a minute feels like an eternity, let alone like 5 and 2 seconds or whatever, you know. My son Jaron has epilepsy. I was really fortunate with him that he's only had 3 seizures, each one of them grand mal, and then we were able to get him on a medication that works. But the thing with a nonverbal autistic child is they're not easy to calm down under normal circumstances, let alone when they're coming out of a grand mal seizure. And so I can really relate to this one and the emotions in this one. I also really like the roar of unending waves simmering in my ears goes silent. I dare not breathe until you do, spinning down a vertical vortex where time suspends me in a noose. Like, I really like I dare not breathe until you do, because there is something extremely scary about seizures. And extremely scary, as you were mentioning, Dan, about, you know, when your kids get sick or injured, head wounds are like that. I remember when my second born was the first one to fall off the bed, hit the dresser, and get a cut on his head. And the thing is he didn't even have to end up getting stitches, but head wounds bleed so bad that you immediately go into panic mode. Just looking at the amount of blood that pours from them. But I have to say that I'm really glad that Diana shared this with us. And, you know, my thoughts go out to her and her child. And this is beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And, you know, she did not enter the contest. She said she didn't want to be judged, but she wanted to contribute this to help with awareness. So I appreciate that, Diana. Robbie, would you like to comment?
Yes. It was interesting, I thought so, to see a poem from the different perspectives. I had made a sardonic sound when it said, I won't remember, and because I was thinking of, like, how it's such a weird thing, like, you know, this person seeing this traumatizing thing, and you feel it afterwards, you feel the after effects of the muscles and that, but you don't remember any of it, so you have, like, no perception of just how much you scare somebody, right? And so that's why I have that sardonic sound there, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to remember any of this, but they are for the rest of their life. And I just remember when my dad wagged his finger at me and said, "Don't you ever scare me like that again." And my brother, he was like saying, "There's something wrong with Robert." And he's like, "Well, what?" "There's just something wrong with Robert." Like, I didn't, obviously I wasn't conscious of that. I didn't remember that, but that's the thing. Like, I can just imagine what it would be like for somebody to witness a grand mal, because, like I had said in the chat, you know, there's misconceptions in that, that for the most part, you know, I don't think it's as much a misconception anymore. Maybe it was in the past, but, you know, like, don't put something in their mouth to stop them from choking, because they'll just bite on that, right? And it'll just make things worse. And, yeah, like the line here, "All I can do is hold your head." And you don't have many options, as you said. When somebody's having dysphagia, there really isn't much you can do. And even afterwards, there isn't that much you can do. There have been times when I realized I had a small seizure, and I didn't go to the hospital, because I said, "Well, all I can do is just let my muscles relax back and just make sure that my meds are, you know, going to be squared away again, and that they're at a good level." But yeah, overall, you can't do too much, and I think that's the part that makes it the most anguish, is as a parent or as some sort of loved one relationship, you want to be able to do something. And when you can't do anything at all, and it's something that just looks so terrible, it just eats away at you.
So I have, I'm sorry to ask questions. I'm the ignorant one on the show tonight. What is a grand mal? And I would love to hear a sardonic sound.
Well, I just went like, kind of like that.
Oh, okay.
Maybe nobody picked up on that. The grand mal is when your the entire body goes in, it locks up, and your mind, my understanding is the people think it's chaos in your mind, but it's actually not. It's hyper-regularity. Your nerve impulses, what I read, go 10,000 times their normal neurotransmission levels. So it's like it's not like your mind's going all over the place. You're what you usually have neurotransmission-wise goes 10,000-fold. So you can just imagine what that's why you blank out, right? Your brain's not built to handle that, and that's why your body locks up, because it's getting just a massive amount of the signals coming to them, and it can be like so sore. I had the whole story that I won't get into, but I had a moron of a doctor at one point, and he was saying, "Oh, I'm not giving you your epilepsy meds. I already gave them to you." I'm like, "Oh my God." And because of his idiocy, I had a huge grand mal, and I could barely walk up the stairs. Like, that's how bad it can get. My calves were just like concrete. So.
Wow. So it affects your
grand
whole...
Grand mals are not fun.
Yeah.
Sorry to ask questions, go ahead.
If I may add on to that, because the kind of seizures I used to have before they got under control were the ones called grand mal, but actually the name of that has been changed. I didn't even know that myself until a few years ago. It didn't change to tonic-clonic, and I don't know why it was changed, but it was. And the only reason I found that out is because I was seeing a new doctor for something else, and he was getting my medical history, and I said that I had epilepsy and my seizures were under control, but I used to have grand mal. And he's like, "Well, what do you mean by grand mal? Don't you know that they're not called grand mal anymore?" And I was like, "Well, no, I didn't, but shouldn't you as a doctor know what they used to be called?" I mean, but no, it is a lot like what Robbie says. But basically what it is grand mal is like when you think of the classic seizure, like the ones you might see in a dramatic scene in a movie where somebody falls down and starts foaming at the mouth and every part of their body is shaking and they lose consciousness and they hit their head. That's a lot of what a grand mal is like physically. But there's also, you know, the before, which is called an aura. You get this feeling that it's actually called an aura where you can tell you're going to have a seizure, but there isn't really a whole lot you can do about it. And then there's the coming out of it where you're just physically sore, you're confused. And a lot of people really don't know what to do, though I do think it has gotten better. I remember one time as a teenager having a seizure right during, I was spending the night at a friend's, we were having a sleepover, there was a bunch of us girls, and we were singing, what was that song, Bobby Sue, I Want to Mama Marry You, I forget who sung that, but some country music group, anyways, but right, bam, in the middle of my performance, I went down, and my friends, after I finally came out of it, were like, we didn't know what to do. We were trying to shove your medication down your mouth, and you wouldn't open it, and which was probably a good thing, because my medication wasn't the kind you were meant to, like, give somebody when they were having a seizure, but I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to add that in, that that's some of the physical things of the seizure and the change in name. And yeah, Robbie has it described really well when he talks about just like everything, basically like all these mixed messages and the brain just basically shutting down. It doesn't know what to do. It's getting too many mixed messages at once.
There seem to be subtypes. I read about subtypes, and there's one I could swear I saw this subtype. I haven't been able to find it again, but I want to find it again because it relates to me. It's the emergent tonic-clonic, and it's when you're coming out of REM sleep, because I've noticed, and I'm glad I've pinned this down because it helps a lot, but my own seizures seem to center around my REM sleep. And like at 4 a.m., I naturally, for the longest time, I've naturally woken up, and then I go back to sleep again. But if I get unnaturally woken up at that time, like I jerked awake or something, I can go back. If I go back to sleep, a lot of times, especially if I haven't taken a lot of my magnesium and D3, which seems to be the biggest thing of that helps, I'll go back to sleep, and I'll have the most god-awful nightmares you could imagine. And I seem to have like a small seizure. And that actually happened at the hospital. There was a sleep-deprived EEG that I had, and a blasted thump happened around 4 a.m. And I thought to myself, oh, I know it. I just know it. I'm going to have a seizure now. And sure enough, my right leg went straight up, and I became unresponsive. So that seems to be, I haven't been able to find that exact term, but that does seem to be like a subtype where you're coming out of REM sleep and something goes wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm convinced, honest to goodness, I'm convinced, I could be wrong, but there's just something about the epileptic brain that seems to lend itself to more vivid and more weird dreams. Like, I don't know about you, Faisy. Like, do you have that where you seem to have more vivid and more weird dreams, like, than, say, your friends, or I don't know if you talk to people. Like, I'm always telling people my dreams, and they're always like, what the hell did you eat last night?
Yeah. I was like that up until 6 years ago. So most of my life I had, like, crazy detailed dreams, like way more than anyone I knew. But when I had my brain tumor removed, I stopped dreaming almost completely.
Wow.
So I'm starting to have dreams again, but not nearly, like, they're not immersive like that. I don't get, like, the story dreams that, like, completely separate from my life. I used to, like, write, like, whole story, like, books in my mind every night, and it'd be, like, this whole adventure, and really super detailed and, like, surreal. But, no, I don't anymore, and I actually really miss it. I liked my crazy dreams.
Well, my brother, one time I was describing a dream to him, but he didn't realize I was describing one of my dreams. He says, what movie are you talking about? I says, I'm not talking about a movie. I'm talking about my dream. The thing is, it's the curse, the blessing curse too, because like when I've had my dreams, some of the dreams I feel like I've almost visited heaven, But then the bad one, like especially when I had the vivid nightmares, it was just awful. I'd wake up, like my eyes were burning because I think my REM, like the, you know, the REM sleep, your eyes going back and forth. Like I felt like Commander Data in that one episode where he's going, processing, processing. It felt like my eyes were doing that. And I literally said to myself one time in a dream, no word of a lie, I said, is this hell? Like that's, you know, but I still have pretty vivid dreams, but thankfully I always go back to the magnesium and B3. But that supplement has taken away the vivid nightmare part at least. But you're still, yeah, you can have, I think on average, someone with epilepsy has a pretty vivid and wild dream. You sometimes even say to yourself, where did my mind come up with that? Oh, my God. What have I been smoking? You ask yourself that. What have I been smoking?
Yep. True. Sex dreams when you're epileptic are absolutely the strangest. At least to myself personally, but, you know.
All right, Pam, you're going to have to write us a story about that.
Yeah, it's going to have to become a poem.
All right, I'm looking for it.
I've got a couple of poems like that, but, yeah.
I'm going to read my second one. This is Hold Me In. When seismic plates in my brain snap and a storm of blue lightning crackles, I weather the seizures with help. My tribe holds me together. A fog rolled in, settled between my brows, struggling to stay awake, alert, aware. Simple answers trail spun, aimlessly unseen. A shadow of numbness draped over my face, shutting down nerves from forehead to chin. The unfelt muscles suddenly coming to life tightly. Left side of the animated corpse seemed to fall away. Arms dangling useless, leg limp. Right side rebels, jerking, shaking, trembling. Uneven, rhythmless shakes of everything in that hemisphere that halt in waves of uneasy, overpowering calm. Suddenly lurching, contracting and extending of lungs and esophagus, gasping, gagging, groveling in a hunt for steady airflow, a dip of darkness in the corners of the eyes, a fizzle up the spine, a sudden shock of tension, like every muscle may explode, followed momentarily by a release of every hidden tightness. Finally, pulling together the brain capacity to pick up the phone, hands struggling with the mundane task of dialing, spit into the phone without much preamble. The floor is shifting eerily, carpet dancing. I go down to its level so it can't knock me out unexpectedly. Shivers ripple from my toes to my fingers in snowy bursts of orange sparks, waves of tightness following. Imagine the mushroom cloud of a nuclear blast. It blows through me, searing my organs, leaving them wobbling and unequipped to hold me in one piece, never mind upright. My thoughts are sluggish, turtles slowly escaping quicksand. They tumble out in nervous giggles as I scan the muck of my brain for surviving intelligence that drowned. There is a bitter sweetness to these dark days, for my clan pulls together in so many ways. Water, medication, and soothing cold, a blanket to feel safe in bed, even on the floor, being held tightly while my insides try to burst out, being rubbed gently when the aftershocks take hold. My two lovely coworkers glued me back together. My fearsome, sweet Jarl came to fetch me, a journey probably more harrowing than expected, supporting my spasming weight as I regained my sea legs. My ever-compassionate Duchess checking in with her beautiful voice, lifting my spirits. The unreliable nature of my faulty body is difficult to admit or accept. The friendships that it has spotlighted as my tribe steps up to care for me are the unexpected rainbow worth the storm. End poem.
Excellent read, Faziana. What a beautiful poem about a horrible disease. I mean, this is beautiful. It was beautifully written, which is a really hard thing to do. And hold me in is interesting, and you can tell me if I'm reading it wrong, but it is hold me in, meaning almost like holding me together, but hold me in because you're talking about, you know, when you talk about your friends and the people that came to you at the end. So I kind of got both of those, and I got to see where was that part here. Yeah, oh, it's the whole talking. So this is, I think, what I think of when I think of epileptic seizures or seizures in general. And you're almost like you're describing a stroke. But I didn't, you know, I've seen people, you know, seizing, like you said, foaming at the mouth and kind of shaking, but I didn't realize how physical it could be. So the left side animated corpse seems to fall away, arm dangling. And, you know, Robbie had talked about, you know, not being able to walk or move up the stairs. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't realize it can get you physically like that as well, too. Finally, you know, pulling the brain capacity to pick up the phone, hands struggling, floor shifting, you know, shivers rippling from my toes, snowy brain. It's just, you know, it's almost like it's the story that you're kind of telling. And that's what I'm saying is to me is the scary part. you know, I think about that, about being alone. My wife and I live in a house by ourselves, and sometimes I'll have these panic attacks. Like if she goes out and I'm in the house by myself, I'm like, what if something happens, you know, and I'm just here and there's nobody to take care of me. And I think about that about my wife too sometimes if she's alone. I'm like, what if I can't reach her on the phone? I'm like, what if something happened? So that must be, I mean, you guys can tell me if it's scarier to be in a crowd of strangers and something happens, so it's like you said before, embarrassing, or if it's scarier if you're totally by yourself because there's, like, nobody to help you if something horrible happens. I would think the latter would be the scariest part, but really beautifully written, the Faziana. So let's go to Robbie.
Well, I was going to say to your question, it's almost not a question of if it's more or less. It's a different kind of fear. And actually,
sure,
this poem had reminded me of that, where it's this weird thing of, okay, so if you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't, because this poem here lists all these all the physical things of, you know, your arms slumping and all that. So it's like, well, okay, either you can have a grand mal and you don't remember anything, but at least you don't remember all the awfulness, but you wake up feeling like a punching bag, right? Or you can be conscious or you know, like semi-conscious, and you're like at least fairly aware of all these things happening. So, you know, it'd be like if you gave someone the choice between those two things, they'd be like, is there a choice C? You know, that, I think is kind of what they would be feeling, right? And I think it can almost be a day to day thing sometimes too, where there's some days where you're, because of your temperament that particular day, you might be more afraid to be alone. And then there's other days where, you know, because of how you're feeling, you might be more afraid on that particular day of being in a crowd, right? Like for me, I know that my seizures always have, it's that thing, seizures are very individual. Like I know my grand mals always happen in bed. They always happen when I sleep. Always, always, always. It's my epilepsy is tied to something in my sleep, right? So I don't have as much fear because of that, because I know at least when it's going to happen in that. Like when I'm out in public, when I'm out in the store, at work or something, you know, I really don't want to dissociate and be like wandering around the store and like, hey, Rob, why aren't you doing your job? You know, and I'm on autopilot kind of talking gibberish, right? So it can be very individual to the person depending on what their epilepsy is like, when they get it, and what the triggers are.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, this is, I think this is a great show to bring awareness. It's certainly somebody for me who's definitely ignorant on, you know, the traumas of epileptic seizures. So it's very interesting that you have it at night, and it just brings questions to me. The magnesium interests me because calcium magnesium actually helps you to relax muscles. I used to take that. I'd get very tense muscles, and I would actually take calcium magnesium, and it helps you to it helps you to calm down. It helps you to calm your nerves. I know
the magnesium, I think the magnesium soothes your neurotransmission. Like,
okay.
I don't know if it was right for my epilepsy or not, but I was getting like a slight tingling in my fingertips, very ugly feeling. And actually, I think maybe my epilepsy medicine slightly lowers my magnesium levels. So,
okay.
And I had read about that somewhere, and I started taking the magnesium and D3 and it helped with that. It helped with the nightmares. And so, like, for me, it's gotten to the point where I consider it as important to take in its own way as my main meds. So, but like I say, everybody's case is different. You know, for someone else, it might not do anything, right?
Yeah, B2 and B3 are interesting, too, because I used to take that when I had I hurt into my nerves playing drum, a drummer and playing drums. And I forget which one, I think B2 helps to heal nerves, and B3 helps heal the coating around the nerves, which protects the nerves. So it's interesting. And the sleep, it interests me, too, because a lot of people have strokes, and the most common time to have strokes and heart attacks is actually in the morning. Especially like in the wintertime, people get up and they shovel, and that's what they have them, because they're dehydrated. So their body is trying harder if you're dehydrated when you're working to push the oxygen when you're out of breath. If you're dehydrated, you don't have enough liquid in you to literally do that. So that gives me a curiosity. But anyway, I'll stop asking questions. I think taking too much in the show. Pam, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think this poem is amazing. But I have to say, I really appreciate you asking questions. And one of the things I really like, well, besides the fact that this is an epilepsy awareness show and obviously very near and dear to my heart, I really feel like this worked out great because, to me, like, you ever watch those shows on a certain topic where they have a panel or, you know, that's what I feel like. I feel like we ended up with, like, the perfect panel. We got three different people with seizures, but their experiences are all different. We have you, Dan, and you're the person who doesn't have seizures and doesn't know anybody with epilepsy. But that is great because of the fact, well, besides the fact that, you know, you don't have epilepsy. It's great because you bring a different perspective. And to me, I just feel like this show worked out so well because we have come up with a panel that just works, you know?
Yeah,
and we
all
have different experiences about epilepsy, so, yeah.
No, I agree. I think the discussion has been great. Discussions have been great.
Absolutely. And, Faizy, I think this is an amazing poem. It is extremely visceral, which it should be, because people need to understand that it is scary and confusing. And I really like and appreciate how you write on the complete loss of control over body and mind. I really like the imagery of my thoughts are sluggish, turtles slowly escaping quicksand. And that is so true. And then the whole visceral imagery of what it's like to completely lose yourself. But the most important thing in this poem, and I think this is something that people forget, is how important it is to have a support group, how important it is to have those friends, you know, or family that can be there for you when you're going through these difficult times. So I'm glad you wrote about that. Very well done.
Thank you. And I totally agree with you about, like, the panel aspect of tonight. I think it's great that Dan is asking questions and that we have three people who have go through different kinds of seizure experiences because if it's perfect for Awareness Week, we're definitely going to have, I think, a second show of this. I think we have enough that we can fill two shows, so I've decided – I'm making the decision right on the spot that the 30th will also be the continuation of Epilepsy Month because we have more to say, I think, which is good.
Awesome. I look forward to that.
Excellent, excellent. All right. But move those brain cells off forward, and what do we get going on now?
So now we have one that I have an audio recording for, and this is by Cat7, Cat7 Corners, pardon me, and I'm going to play her recording.
When a light goes out, I get a ladder and change the bulb. Aura physically sweeps. Its movement rushes from one side of my body to its other side. I'm surrounded, embraced in its bubble as if hugged. My laugh induces seas. Not all is good medicine or good for the soul. Not when you are a gelastic epileptic. My overactive neurons in the right temporal lobe. They were. God has since healed. Praises. Amen. He healed with two neurologists and three attempts to control the seizures with allopathic meds could not. Being told there was no cure, I chuckled. God is in control. The nerve. I was not supposed to ever laugh, swim, nor climb a ladder. I told one of my docs, laughter is my fingerprints. Being part fish, I must swim. But climbing ladders? Yes, I could give that up. My main MD supported my desire to try herbal supplements. I learned about naturopathic practices new to both he and I. Since the pharmaceuticals were not working and our agreed concern of the side effects of the prescriptions brought. A year later, fully free, no more seizures, and life returned. Not even needing herbals to curb, present time from this right. It's been almost two decades. Now when a light goes out, I get a ladder and change the bulb. Written by Kat Miles, November 7th, 2023. And this is dedicated to everyone who suffers from seizures. Some people who suffer seizures are not an epileptic. You can have seizures without being and diagnosed with epilepsy, and other people are epileptic. A perfect example would be if you have a high fever and you get a seizure, that does not mean you're an epileptic. I've had two people I know close to my part pass. One is one of my dearest closest friends, Margaret. This is dedicated to you. And also a woman I used to take care of. Her name is Kathy, and she passed from one of her seizures. So, Margaret and Kathy, I dedicate this to you and all seizure sufferers and epileptics present and past during National Month of Recognizing People Who've Had Seizures and Epilepsy. I would like to also say a little bit more about myself, and I'll read what I wrote here. I am a former epileptic. For 1 year, I had a rare form of epilepsy, gelastic temporal lobe epilepsy. I had to relearn to read, play, catch, spell, draw, paint, write poetry, and effectively speak. I was not 100% nonverbal. I struggled to get the thoughts out verbally, but was able to think them with ease. I was a teacher at the time and had to give up teaching. I had to relearn life. Never in past one with social anxiety from the seizures, I ended up getting it. Thankfully, God healed me. He healed what doctors said there was no cure for. I still at times get social anxiety given certain factors. However, everything else has been restored. God had an angel in human form visit me during this health battle. Here is the video if you'd like to know more. For anybody who my story touches, if you would subscribe and support my YouTube channel, I'd be very appreciative, or follow me on allpoetry.com under the handle Cat7 corners. And if you have any questions, I would love to answer them about seizures, about epilepsy. If I know the answer, I'll answer. And if not, I can look it up in research, or just if I can't figure it out, I'll just let you know. But please feel free to ask. There's so many different variants and forms of seizures out there and epilepsy.
Thank you so much for that recording. It was really nice to get to hear it in your own voice. I love when people send recordings to us. And I think that this did a really good job of talking about how it can be a struggle to figure out what works for you. Different people respond to different kinds of medications or what have you. I like that she brought in a different kind of epilepsy than we had previously been talking about, gelastic epileptic, so that uncontrollable laughter, which, really makes me wonder about some of my laughing fits, because I do, once I start laughing, have a really hard time stopping, but I don't think I have that, but now I'm being the hypochondriac and wondering if that explains a lot about me. I think that it's great that she hasn't had it for so long. Really happy that she was able to recover from that. And I really like the latter thing. At first, when I read the title, I thought it was going to be like when the light goes out, is going to be like a light in her brain that she has to recalibrate. But it ends up being that she can be independent and climb a ladder that she couldn't actually climb things before because she might fall down. So I think that's it's nice to be able to have the sense of accomplishment where you've recovered and you can do something that you couldn't before, and there's that happiness in having the independence. It was also really nice of her to dedicate it to those who we've lost because of epilepsy and or to seizures, not necessarily epilepsy. And I'm sorry for your loss, Kat. Thank you for sharing all of this. Dan, would you like to comment?
I definitely would, and yeah, I like the ending as well too. I think I mentioned it before when you the thing I've had the worst is I had a spinal injury. I had a disc, partial disc in it, and it made my leg. I literally almost my left leg was a dead limb, couldn't use it, And I'm fine. They did surgery and they fixed it and it all came back, but it literally took me a year to walk. And I've had a couple other near-death experiences as well too. I've had a few of them actually, and I think about every single day. I think about it. I'm so happy to just walk up the stairs, and do this. And I walk everywhere. I walk, I live in a city, so I live near stores, so I don't go in the car a lot. If I have to go to the store, in fact, now the way I've been doing it, I don't really even think about it. Oh, I got to go to the store and get something. I like walk, even though it's a good 15-20 minute walk to get there and then another one to come back. And people have asked me why before they do it. And I said, well, cause someday I might not be able to, because I've always years now, I haven't, appreciate the stuff that you can do. And, I like that about that. And I like the, whatever you believe in God or whatever you believe religiously, it's the fact that it's out of your control, right? There's not much you can do about it. If medical science could cure you, they would have. So it's just in the hand. It's out of your hands. It's in the natural world. It's out of your hands. So it's in, she's saying in God's hands. My grand unified theory about God and everything is that God is everything. We are the everything. We're part of that. So, whatever you think that is, I think it's just everything. And we're all a part of that. And that's the kind of point, is that something like that, again, is just out of your hands. There's nothing you can do about it. So if you do get saved, if you do get cured or if you survive, right, your whole life without dying of an epileptic seizure, it's the universe, you know, the luck of the draw type of thing, right? Which is interesting, and living on something like that, you know, must be frightening, knowing that, you know, is this going to be a seizure that's going to kill me this time, or what's going to happen, you know, or somebody with horrible heart disease, or somebody with whatever other thing that, you know, any day could be your last. That's got to be tough. And I don't think you guys have that bad. It sounds like you're, you know, it's fairly under control, and it happens and you move on. But, you know, anything that's any kind of physical ailments can get that. So that's kind of what I got out of that. And it was a very beautiful tribute that she did to her friends, and you know, it seems like she's very passionate about, because she went through this horrible thing that it seems like was not a one-time thing, but she went through it, and it sounds like she's cured of it, and is very appreciative of it and sympathetic and understanding of the dangers of these kind of illnesses. So, yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Daisy. Pam, your turn.
Oh, this is amazing. Such heartfelt lines. And I really like how she speaks on the emotional aspect of epilepsy, but also shows a willingness to speak to people and to educate people about epilepsy. I actually did not know about this gelastic form, and was really happy to learn something new. I am really sorry about the loss of her friends. It can be a difficult thing for sure. You know, I'm very thankful that she was able to find a healing. You know, the ending was great. Now when a light goes out, I get a ladder and change the bulb. And how that speaks on going back to being able to be an independent person. And I can just imagine what it must have been like, how frustrating it must have been to have to go back to learning how to talk, to read, you know, to even write. I mean, that idea of, like when she says in the beginning, I had to relearn to read, play catch, spell, draw, paint, write poetry, and effectively speak. I can only just imagine the frustration of that. So I'm really thankful that Katz was willing to share her experience with us, and, you know, to also share that experience in order that others may be educated. So very well done.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I had mentioned that I had a dead limb leg, and it took me a year how to walk again. And it did. I had to learn how to walk. But, you know, drumming, I had a fear, like, because I play drums, so my left foot is my hi-hat, for those of you know what a drum is. And I'm thinking, like, and I play double bass drums, and I'm like, am I going to be able to play drums again? Like, what happened, you know? But I was able to actually get it. It wasn't I didn't lose how to play, because that's all mind memory. It was just the physicality of being able to kind of move things again. So with epilepsy, like I don't know. I'm trying to make a panel, but I'm wondering, can you lose the muscle memory in your brain? Because that's really where it is, you know? I think about it when I play drums, just I have physical, but, you know, if I don't play for a long time and I sit down again, it's more the physicality. I know what to do, but my muscles don't want to do it. So I just have to kind of warm them up again, and then I'm okay. But if the muscle memory is gone from your brain, so, you know, I'm curious if that happened, if it was more of a physical having to relearn things, or if it was also just literally starting from scratch again. You know,
it could be either way.
The brain, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I know. For myself, I had to learn how to use my left side again because my brain stopped communicating with that side. So it was like it wasn't natural. Like, you know, if you're trying to use a muscle that you've never used, for example, if you try belly dancing for the first time, and they're like, "Do this," and they're like wiggling their stomach, and you're like, How do I even tell that to do that? Like, it's, I don't know. I personally, I have like a disconnect where I'm like, what you're doing is not something that my body knows how to do, like even start. And my whole left side was like that, whereas like my right side, you know, you just think, I want to pick up that cup, and then it does it. Whereas my left side, I'm like, okay, it's not doing anything. And you have to like relearn how to like send those little impulses to do the thing, which is so hard to explain, but like you have to reconnect those pathways, doing it over and over again. And at the same time, language, I had the words in my head, but I couldn't say them out loud. So I don't know if that would be considered a muscle memory thing of the brain, because it's different. But, like, I would think a word, and then I would say a different word. And it was so frustrating. But there was also times where I just forgot the words in general. So it's a real mix of things. Brains are complicated. I'll say that.
They sure are.
They are.
I do that thing where I forget, like, real simple words. Like, I'll forget, like, say, for example, the word car, but I can describe it. I'll be like, you know that thing that has four tires, and you drive it, and that'll be me, like, trying to come up with the word car.
Dan, are you drumming? Well,
I was. I'm sorry. I forgot to put mute. I'm so sorry. Yes, I was. I actually have. It's nothing against you guys. I do five things at once. I'm sorry. I just have to do. I actually have a little. I have these tiny little Moroccan congas here. I do five things at once. I have to do it. Just how my brain works. I'm always, my boss, like, she's on something, and then all of a sudden, I'm 3 years ahead already. Like, I've already decided within 5 seconds exactly what we have to do right now, and then what we have to do for the plan for next year, and I'm already into, like, 5 years from now, you know what I mean? She's still on, like, what's step one for today? That's just how my mind works. I'm all over the place, so sorry. Apologize.
I'm sorry, I understand. Part of my neurological rehab when I go into shutdown mode is you have to use your body and your mind at the same time. So if I was trying to get my hand to work again, which it wasn't doing great for a while, I had to talk at the same time as I did it, because if you're just doing the physical part, it doesn't activate certain parts of your brain. So when I got my testing done, I had to be able to talk and move my hand on both sides, and you have to be able to do it independently, each thing, and all together. And they were totally different skills to be able to do all things. So you're using different parts of your brain. It's good.
Well, it's interesting. So when I'm playing drums, I'm doing four different things, right? You have four limbs going, but I'm also listening to all the instruments in there and trying to, like, follow them. The interesting part of it, so I'm kind of doing four things, but listening to multiple other things, too, at the same time, listening to the whole band, but also the individual instruments and trying to follow all of them separately. But the interesting thing is, and I don't know the number, but there's only so many things that your body can input and do at the same time. So in other words, like right now, right, think of your feet. Not one of you was feeling your shoes or your socks, right? You weren't doing it.
Bye.
Now you can't not feel your feet because I told you to feel your feet, but you're not doing something else. There's only so much input. It's true. There's only so much input your body can do at the same time, which is why go ahead, sorry.
I argue because part of my problem where I get sensory overload is I do feel it all the time. So I can't shut off those feelings, and I get overwhelmed if there's too much going on because I'm like, I'm already feeling too much. Like, you can't add a loud sound because I already feel like the texture of my socks.
What we do is it goes so fast because you can do things, but because you change it around, but it's like four or five things that a body can feel at the same time. And maybe there is, you know, there's neurological disorders. Everybody's different. What some people can do more, but you go back and forth so fast that you don't really realize it's happening. You know, so you do feel, you know, when you're at concerts or you're doing things, it's all hitting you, at the exact same like microsecond moment, it's hard to hear, but it goes back and forth so fast that it can feel like. It's kind of like watching a movie. Like when you're watching a movie, you're looking, it's moving, but you're actually seeing 24 frames a second. You're actually seeing single pictures are moving, but your mind can't, your brain sees it because it's going so fast. You know, you're actually seeing those pictures there, but your brain is interpreting it as an actual moving thing. And I think that's what happens a lot in people is it goes so fast that you don't realize it, and it's all coming in at you. Now, Fazy, again, you might be different where you are actually feeling, you know, 20 things at the same time, which to me is insanity. You know, that's a tough thing. But it's an interesting fact I always wondered about. Is that? But anyway, off on a tangent. other people got a comment here too, so.
I think Robbie is the last one there.
Yeah. It was in the kind of the edges of my awareness that there are other types of epilepsy. See, now my brain's but I hadn't really looked at that. And man, like just for that kind of an epilepsy, it's just so intense. And there's a certain. It to me, it's especially scary when something that is associated with, like, you know, laughing is why are you laughing? Oh, because I was watching a Seinfeld episode or, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's not usually, oh, I'm having a massive seizure that makes me laugh uncontrollably. Like, to me, that it's just, that's like almost like a horror movie-ish sort of thing of, like when something of humor is associated with something so terrible, right? They like makes it like worse, or just like more existentially, you know, surreal and scary. And just as everyone else, I appreciated the dedication afterwards. I really felt that this was heartfelt. And it's a good reminder, too, of the different options that are out there because, you know, sometimes it is worth investigating herbals and all that. You know, obviously have to do it with great care. But I think people forget that there are options out there aside from the standard medicines. And that, you know, if you've gone through all of those options, that there are other things to look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. I mean, I would not disregard your doctor's recommendations.
I wanted to put that caveat out there too. But yeah.
Yeah, look into what works for you, but also run things by your doctors. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I do alternative stuff too, but I also, you know,
you run it by your doctor, yeah.
Yeah, I run it by a doctor, and I do both. But, I mean, everyone is a little bit different. You just – I don't want to say, like, you know, just do this thing, and then someone does it, and they're not getting their treatment. We are out of time. I'm getting the warning from Blog Talk. So we will definitely be back in 2 weeks with more epilepsy-themed poems. If we didn't read yours tonight and you gave me them, we are going to do them in 2 weeks on the 30th. So thank you, everyone who contributed. Thank you to my panel. You are wonderful. And this was enlightening. So I hope other people learned things too, and we will get back to you in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Night, guys.
Good night, all.